This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, you. Yeah, you in the cafe. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ+ community, just like you? So you may not be aware, but times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. Tell your next door neighbour, your friends, and even your dad to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
Good morning, everybody. You're here with Taz and Janet at the Saturday Magazine. And on this beautiful sunny day.
On Joy 94.9.
On Joy 94.9.
Good on you, Janice. And our very first guest this morning, of course, is John Pizzuto, who is well-known to our listeners and well-known to many people who listen to radio and read papers. John is a commentator on a whole range of issues. John's also well-known in our community as being the former Liberal member for the state seat of Hawthorne, which he lost at the last election. Good morning to you, John.
Kath and Janet, good morning to both of you.
Good morning. Are you enjoying the morning so far?
I am. I was actually really enjoying listening to that opening sequence that you had about working from home and the like, and I was just going to chip in if it's okay to say...
Please do.
I've really rediscovered how productive I am working in sneakers, which I really like. And I'm trying to think, is there a way when... Now, I know we're slowly going back to some of the old ways, but is there a way I can blend a suit with a pack, a pair of Puma white sneakers? Does that work? I've got to work that
look,
out.
Look, I reckon you can get away with that, to be honest. I mean, if you look at some of the young Italian models, yes, they do that.
Yes.
You have an Italian heritage. Maybe you can get away with it, John. Give it a try. Who knows?
But not the tracksuit pants.
No tracksuit pants.
Not the tracksuit pants. You need to let them go. Perhaps a stretch pant fabric.
For the record, Janice, I never wore track pants. Never do.
And
unless I'm not
Janet,
well.
Janet, haven't you heard? I think, isn't Dolce & Gabbana bringing out a kind of a pinstripe suit version of a tracksuit? You know, that you can blend in with some shoes.
Yes, but I think...
No, the answer to that's no, John.
Well, Dolce & Gabbana might be able to do that, but I think you probably need to be 17 or 18, maybe even 16, and about a size, 4 to be able to get away with it, no. And at least 9 foot.
John meets most of those criteria, though, Janice.
Oh, dear.
So, John, it's been...
I think the moral out of that story is the more comfortable you are, the more productive we'll all be.
I actually think that there has been a... bit of a shift in our dress code, and the more I watch some of our community leaders, the less often men are wearing ties, the more often they're wearing things like casual North Face jackets.
Only if they've got good news. Yes. Only if it's good news.
Only if it's good news. A tie means bad news, does it?
Questions.
John, we want to move on. Very keen to hear your reflections of what occurred in the Victorian Parliament during the course of this week. There was an attempt to spill the leadership, and another member of Parliament decided to throw their hat in the ring, and of course the whole thing just fizzled out into nothing. What are your reflections? Why do you think this occurred? Why was there a spill in the first place?
Look, I think there was probably a bit of frustration building up over the whole COVID period. The government, like all incumbent governments, seemed to be doing really well. I mean, we've had the debate about hotel quarantine, but put all that to one side, I think there was, at some point, there was going to be a need just to address some of that frustration. And whilst these things, let me be frank with our listeners, these things are never great for any party to have to deal with. But the fact that it was dealt with this week... at least it brought it to a head. It was dealt with fairly decisively. The vote was pretty decisive, 22-9. Everybody's sort of now focused on looking at the next election and saying we've got a real opportunity to present ourselves as an alternative government. And I actually think that this week, you know, as challenging as those things can be and are, can mark a bit of a line in the sand, and you go, right, okay, we've got 20 months now to make that case, and there's plenty to make a case on there. There are a lot of things that the government can reasonably and fairly be held to account on and criticised for. So if we can use that whole experience of this week, as I'm confident we can, then we can present that alternative vision.
John, you did say in your commentary then that it was a very definite and a definitive win, 22-9. But when I look at that carefully, that to me says that in fact one third of the troops are not happy with the current leadership and they voted elsewhere. Is it really that comfortable?
Well, look, I guess any challenge by definition isn't, right? So, you know, to be candid about that, I think it's fair to make that point. But I think the result was, the wording I would use is decisive enough to mark a bit of a line to say, okay, in that party room, that does represent a fairly, I think, clear outcome. That overwhelmingly, sure, there were 9 who voted for it, but overwhelmingly there was a desire to like give ourselves the best chance of winning it. And certainly the commentary, both on the record and off, seems to be that, look, we've dealt with it and now we've got a chance. And if we take that, we're quite capable of succeeding at the next election if we pull all those resources. And I've said previously in the week, I've served with those MPs in the party room, and I know that there's enough experience and knowledge in there for that to be a very productive party room. I know that the events leading up to it, you'd say, well, there was a leadership challenge. Well, there was, and I'm not going to run away from that. But you can actually springboard off something like that once everybody sort of comes together, because you have dealt with it. So it's not easy, but it's certainly doable.
Yes, look, I'm not sure. I just feel that when a third of your troops are unhappy, that's a pretty big number. But
we've got an SMS from one of our listeners who is asking, John, if this week's leadership challenge was the Liberal moderates trying to regain the power balance, and is asking the question, what side of Liberal politics was the challenger from?
I would let Brad speak for himself. That's Brad Batten. But I don't see the contesters like that, to be honest. I look at the people who were reported to be in the 9 and people who were not, and I think that's a pretty, mixed grouping in terms of those sort of perspectives. I don't think that's what drove that. I think it was all about just dealing with some of the frustration that's built up over those months. So I wouldn't read any of that into it. And I think Michael O'Brien has been clear, certainly before and indeed since the events of Tuesday, that he's looking to provide, a vision that can sort of reach out to more and more Victorians, whether it's on the environment, education, health, even in terms of the economy and opportunities. So if you look at his commentary on that, I'd say to our listener that that's not how I would see it. I think there were other things, as I've said, driving what happened this week.
Janice.
Well, other big things in the media, obviously, sort of turning to the Commonwealth. Taz and I were talking before the show around some of the things that have been happening, particularly around the Brittany Higgins issues and the March for Justice, and the PM's getting himself in a bit of strife around the reactions to the marches and the rallying. Just wondering if you've got any comments around that.
Yeah, look, I think this is going to be an ongoing and critical issue for a long time, and there is a need to address cultural issues in all workplaces, not just Parliament, to be quite honest. What's becoming clear in what I'd call this sort of recent period of the last few weeks is that there's a very high degree of underreporting. I mean, people just not coming forward and not having the confidence to come forward because they see what goes on when you do. So I think in a cultural sense, this is going to be fairly seismic. And we do have to make the most of it. I've been saying in recent weeks that all parties, certainly political parties have to understand we've all got these challenges, but we've all got to come together and try and change that culture. And for far too long, this has been happening, and it's got to stop. you know, in 2021, that you can have somebody subject to that kind of harassment or treatment that's being reported almost on a daily basis, really tells us that, you know, changing laws is important, but it's not nearly enough. And for men in particular, we've got to understand that the experiences that, you know, women and others face that men don't. I mean, we've got a lot to learn and to appreciate. And I was talking to someone the other day and made the point that, you know, let's face it, for just to take one small example, you know, for men, the experience, you know, something so simple as catching a tram or a train can be very different for men and women, right? Something as simple as that. So there are a whole lot of cultural things we need to be doing, and it's deep in our culture. It's in our politics and in the sort of adversarial nature of our politics. It's in our sports. It's in a lot of features of our culture. And whether it's at the end of harassment or whether it's, you know, domestic violence and family violence, there's a lot more we need to do. And even this week, one of the things I was really, and I know many people felt this way, is we saw the crime stats come out and family violence incidents, you know, up 9%. I mean, we've got a lot more to do.
John, early in the week, thousands of women marched to Parliament House and also conducted their marches in many local regional centres as well, like Ballarat and Bendigo and Geelong. Each had their own marches, as well as Melbourne. The PM or his Minister for Women's Affairs actually did not come out and meet with the crowds. What do you think about that? Do you think he made a mistake, or do you think he should have come out to meet them?
Look, I'll deal with them separately. I'll deal with Maurice Payne first, who I've got a lot of time for. But I've said, you know, to others in the week that I think that the Minister for Women should have gone out. I do think that. I think it's important for the Minister to be there. And there were a number of coalition MPs at the march in Canberra, and even in Victoria there was a representative delegation of female MPs from the coalition there. So I can't understand why that didn't happen. I think it would have been a good look. She may well have reason to, you know, to be fair to her, but I think most people expected her to be out there at least to show some recognition of that. I'll be open about that. I think with the PM, it's a bit more difficult one, because I do wonder whether it would have taken away from the conference if I think, as is reported and what I understand from my own inquiries, that there was a concern about what would happen if he went out and whether...
Oh, it's pretty clear what would have happened. He would have been booed down, wouldn't he?
Well, that and the whole spectacle of that might well have taken away from the marches. And I actually can see how that might have actually been detrimental to the march.
I'm not sure the women who marched would agree with you, though, there, John. I think that there's a feeling amongst many women that they're not being heard. And in fact, if they do come forward to complain about their treatment at the hands of men, then they're ignored. And I guess you can kind of see that in some levels in terms of the price paid by people like Brittany Higgins in relation to, and her partner, I believe, in relation to, you know, really in some ways being a whistleblower around that case. And we still, you know, the perpetrator of that violence, I mean, again, the minister, a female minister, is under enormous pressure as a result of that case, but yet the perpetrator and the men seem to be slipping through reasonably unscathed. I think that's probably part of where that call for the Prime Minister to front up is coming from.
Yeah, look, I don't think it's an unfair point, Janet, for you to make about how women would have seen that. I think it's a fair point that there would have been many people present who would have expected and wanted the PM to be there. I do wonder, though, whether it might have been better ultimately for even a larger delegation of people attending the march to maybe go in and see the Prime Minister and have a fairly direct conversation about those things. I actually think that might have been a better way to go about it. Maybe 8 or 10 or so, you know, a reasonable number of people attending, going and sitting with the Prime Minister. That's it. To take nothing away from that point that you make, that many people would have expected him to go. So, as difficult as it was, it might it might have been better if a delegation went to see him.
And, the organisers made it very clear, though, John, that they wouldn't actually come in to meet with the PM and his ministers because it was really going on their turf, on their territory, as opposed to the PM coming out to meet with them on their turf, which was outside Parliament House amongst the masses. What do you say to that?
Look, I can understand that argument. I still think at the end of the day, what is a very good cause, we all want to get behind it to change the culture and attitude. I mean, I think we all agree about that, right?
Yes.
I'm worried that no one's going to convince me that this is a problem for only my party, right? It is a problem for all parties, and all parties have a responsibility, in my view, to address it in a productive way. So what I'm nervous about is the debate being seen as focusing on just one element of the political system. And where I land on that, and I do get that, I don't dismiss the argument that, you know, the political representative should come out. But what I'd prefer is, in a situation like that, I would have much preferred a delegation, even a sizable one, sitting down with the PM and saying, what can we do to change the culture? Let's have a discussion. Now, what would be better? Let's put it in context then. If you want genuine reform, and we all do, right, what would have been better? To take up the opportunity to sit down with the PM and have a very frank discussion, not a photo op, a frank discussion about what we all need to do, and have the leader of the opposition in waiting or at the same meeting or at another meeting, the leader of other major parties, same thing, frank discussions about what needs to happen and a process moving forward. Or would you prefer a PM to come out and obviously, you know, meet the expectations of many there, come out, face the treatment there, go back in, what have you actually achieved in terms of real reform? I get that many people might have been happy to see him there and to vent at the PM directly, but if you're looking at real reform, don't you want to actually make progress out of that?
I think you're absolutely right about that, John.
I'm just trying to remember the saying, John, there's nothing scarier or something like that of a woman scorned, but how about a PM, a former PM scorned? We've been watching Malcolm Turnbull throw grenades from the sideline around many of these issues, the treatment of the Attorney General and the reaction to the allegations against the Attorney General, and but also around the treatment of women. Have you got any comments around Malcolm Turnbull's behaviour and commentary and its impact on the government?
Look, I mean, for any political party, I think they all dread when former PMs weigh in on discussions. I'm sure a future Labor government will worry about Kevin Rudd doing the same thing. But look, it's a serious... I do take it seriously, the question, Janet, because it has, you know, quite an impact when former PMs weigh in on issues. I'm not sure... First of all... I think former PMs have to be careful they're not settling scores internally. And sometimes I wonder, whilst all of the issues are very serious, sometimes I wonder what some of the motivations are for former PMs when they do weigh in.
And do you think that's what Turnbull's doing?
Oh, to be fair to Malcolm, I don't think you could fairly say it's all of it. I think, you know, a number of the issues would reflect what we're all concerned about, right? Making sure matters are investigated, that there's a culture where all of that shouldn't be contentious. So I want to be fair and not accuse him of that. But there is an element that you can't help look at and think, is this being motivated by what happened in 2018 and the whole leadership rumbles and change back in August, I think it was, of 2018?
I think it's pretty clear that that Turnbull, obviously he's aggrieved, but I think his position that he's putting forward, particularly in relation to women and the way that women treated through these sorts of processes, is pretty consistent, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I wouldn't disagree with. I don't agree with everything he said. I mean, some of the things, I think there was some comments made on the coronial processes in South Australia, which I thought were a bit misplaced. But in general terms, I would find no disagreement on the treatment of women and the need to improve that, no question. But I do think there's a mixture of things going on there, which I think if PMs aren't careful, former PMs aren't careful, they can diminish their ability to weigh in and really shape debates. I'll be honest, I've thought that with Kevin Rudd and with Malcolm Turnbull in particular, who weigh in so frequently, which is their right. I'm not saying they have the right to do it. They do it, they like a free country, but I do think it diminishes them. And I think if you look at two role models, in my view, of former PMs on both sides of the political aisle, I think generally Julia Gillard and John Howard, for me, represent former PMs who seem to know how to weigh in on issues, and Julia Gillard's weighed in on this issue, right? And know when to weigh in on issues and have a bigger impact. So I think with Malcolm, he's perfectly entitled to, and I don't disagree with a lot of what he's been weighing in. I think there's a common view around some of those issues, but I think he just probably should be a bit more judicious in when he does intervene, lest he sort of diminish that capacity to impact.
But John, you would expect Gillard to weigh in on this because she was subject to some really awful treatment by, you know, the leader of the opposition, in fact, at the time, Tony Abbott. I mean, that some of that behaviour targeted her was appalling. And so how could she remain quiet?
Oh, no, that is my point, that she knows her in looking at her in recent years as a former PM, I've actually, just as a member of the public, I've been impressed with she knows when to intervene on issues and does it in a way where when she does intervene, it has a big impact because she's not doing it every day. There are some former leaders all over the place, all, you know, federal, state, right across the country, who weigh in all the time. And as I say, I don't have a problem with them doing that. It's just that I think it leaves their commentary a bit diminished if it's happening all the time. But I do make the point that with Julia Gillard, I think she's been a role model in how a former PM or former leader knows when to intervene. And she has here, obviously, and I agree with you, she's weighed in. And has a big impact when she does.
But it's pretty difficult to avoid the fact that there's been a fair bit of damage done over the last week or so in relation to, you know, the gender equality issues. Are we going to see the Attorney General back?
Look, just one point. I think you're right, Janice, in that some people would see it as damaging. I actually see it as a process that will lead to reform. So it's difficult, but I think these recent weeks is going to be productive of some lasting reform. That's the first point.
I love your optimism, John.
How do you think that will happen, John? That reform?
Because we've got to think about what's happening now that wasn't happening, say, 6 weeks ago. But we're not going to agree on every aspect, I suppose. But let's look at the key things that are happening as a result of, say, Brittany Higgins and others and Grace Tame's work and others in this to come out over recent weeks. We now have Kate Jenkins doing a review. I think that will result in lasting reforms. You have three or four other reform processes underway that are going to look at workplace reforms, cultural reforms. I do think that was my point, that it's sparked a number of processes now that I actually am optimistic that it's going to result in some reforms and tackling some of the issues that simply changing the laws can't do of themselves. So I do think it's going to result. That's why I say, as difficult as this period has been and is, it's going to produce that. In terms of the Attorney General, I to be honest, Janet, I don't know. I don't know what will happen. I don't think anyone can predict. We've got the defamation action. I think that's going to be fast-tracked. I think until that happens, I think there might be a bit of a holding pattern around some of the issues in that particular case. So that I think has been scheduled for a preliminary hearing only in May. So I think we're looking at a few weeks, but it could be a few months, obviously, before that case is determined, maybe longer. If it's fast-tracked in the national interest, there might be a desire by the parties in the court, this is in the federal court, to bring that case on as quickly as possible.
This is the most unpredictable thing I've ever seen in my entire life, actually. It's just so unclear to me what is going to occur and what's going to happen next. I mean, I think somebody like Christian Porter in his role as an Attorney General, he's damned if he does and he's damned if he doesn't. There's no right answer here. There is no textbook. There is no history on this sort of activity, really. So I don't know where this is going to land, to be quite honest with you, John. I also feel, I don't feel optimistic about it. I think this is just going to continue to spiral and be a real thorn in the government side.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I reflect on is I wonder whether part of what's going on is that that the culture in Parliament House and amongst politicians and parliamentary officers is so out of step with the standard of behaviour that's acceptable in other workplaces. And part of the very strong reaction from so many people is a sense that the laws are there, but they don't seem to apply to people in power and people in responsible positions, and that needs to change. So that would be my sense of part of the anger that people are experiencing. And I think anger is probably a very good description.
I think so.
For all of those women who were marching and reporting in Facebook and social media and the commentary and so on and so forth.
And look, I think we've talked about this before, and fair points. I think, you know, in previous discussions, I know I've explained my view previously on, you know, politics being a kind of environment where, you know, there's a kind of instinctive reward for going hard, right? And if you experience distress or you suffer a setback, you know, there's a kind of temptation to see that as a weakness. It's not, but there's that temptation, which is kind of not what the real world goes through. And it's, I think, largely, not entirely, but largely a result of being a kind of crucible in each case. Parliament kind of operates as this kind of, it's true, it's kind of a bubble. And people in there forget where they are, that they're doing the people's business. And it's all about, you know, for many people who go in there, they're unaccustomed to that kind of, you know, fierce, if you like, you know, range of tensions that go on in the parliamentary context. And I do think that, and I know we might be different in terms of how optimistic each of us is, but I actually do think for the first time that I can remember, there is really being a serious effort to say, well, you know, Parliament shouldn't be such a different workplace. There's no reason why it has to be so remote and so different. We've kind of assumed that it is. And in our laws, there are lots of exemptions for parliamentary workplaces in a range of contexts, even equal opportunity laws and Fair Work Act provisions, even in some cases, don't apply. My point is that we've regarded them as kind of separate beasts, and I think what this whole period is showing us is that there's no reason why that should be the case, and I do think it's going to.
So I think we probably need to start to wrap
up. We're almost out of time,
but I just wanted to just read an SMS from Steve who says, can't possibly sack Porter because Morrison would lose a majority in Parliament. Same for Taylor, Kelly, Wilson. Can't sack Reynolds because to sack a woman is sack a woman's going to go down like a lead balloon. So Morrison lowers the standards. So I think there's a high level of cynicism around all of this, and obviously it's got a long way to play. Thank you so much for talking with us today,
always
John.
Always great to have you on the airwaves.
Been a pleasure.
John. Yeah, always great to have you on the airwaves.
You've been listening to Saturday Magazine on Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.